Welcome to We Go There. I'm Lexi.
And I'm Nikki. And our favorite conversations are when someone starts by saying, this might be TMI,
But hey, we go there. Because there's no such thing as having too much information when it comes to your health and wellness.
We dive deep into topics, interview experts, and get answers you need. Because knowledge is power.
And feeling empowered is what we're all about.
So let's go there.
Today, we are joined by Chelsea and Caitlin. They are both psychologists from Lethbridge, Alberta, and they're the founders of Mama Psychologists. I'm really excited to dive into this topic because there's so much that people don't tell us about postpartum. In fact, I've got their book right here. It's called Not Your Mother's Postpartum Book. And the tagline on the back is, quote, "But no one told me to expect this," end quote. And I feel like that is very fitting, my friends. Welcome. We got to dive into all the things.
Yes. Thank you for having us.
And no one told me to expect this. And I feel like it's the same thing for every single baby that you have too, right? Like it's not like the first time. I just had twins. Well, didn't just 8 months ago. And I definitely didn't expect a lot of those things.
Absolutely. Every kid is so different. Every experience is so different.
It's so true. And I was realizing, Lexi, before we started recording, that we have never done an episode on NICU stays and what impact that has on moms, on families, and how can people support their friend who has a baby in the NICU and is doing the like shuffle. It's just a really complex thing. And I think that it'd be really powerful to talk a little bit about what that's like. So anyone be currently living who has lived that journey can really get some support.
And one thing I want to say too, it just hit me, Nikki, is before having the twins, there was a lot of chat because obviously twins being higher risk and being that you can go into labor earlier, I had these milestones of weight and number of weeks to get to so that we didn't have to go be in the NICU or have one of the twins in the NICU. But now it just hit me, and I want to make sure that this is included too. How can someone be prepared almost? I know it's a weird thing to prepare for, but just have the knowledge about what that experience is like, because I just realized like, as much as I was talked about that very much could be a potential, no one ever prepped me for what that experience potentially would be like, even though we talked about it almost every appointment. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So any advice you can provide for people out there would be, I think on this topic in particular, would be so helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was actually a NICU mom. So my son was in NICU for 15 weeks and we lived about 3 hours away from our house for 13 of those 15 weeks. And then we were transferred to our local hospital for the last 2 weeks. And so it's definitely an interesting journey. It's often unexpected. It can be really stressful if you're like preparing for it. A lot of families really feel overwhelmed by NICU life. A big thing that I personally experienced was I didn't really know that how much I was struggling until I was out of the NICU. Like it's kind of this like survival mode, you know, you're constantly surrounded by beeps and sound and noise and babies and nurses and all of these staff members. And so, you know, you're kind of in that fight or flight mode, I think, for an extended period of time, typically, or however you end up being there. But I do want to preface that it doesn't matter if it's 15 weeks, if it's 30 weeks, if it's 1 week, NICU life is stressful and every parent is typically impacted by it differently. So it's important to acknowledge that regardless of your journey, it can feel really painful. And there's a lot of grief that can come with that because it's often, this isn't what I wanted for my baby, or my body failed me, or I did something wrong and now we're in NICU. And so just a lot of grief and emotions can often come up with that. So I know there's a few different questions that you wanted to talk about. So I think the first one to go over is just like preparing for NICU, right? If you know that that's a potential, you know, that's could happen. I think there's a few things that you can do. One is write down questions because often when you're going to those doctor's appointment, right? It's like, are they going to tell me I'm going to have to have my babies today? Are they going to have to tell me that I have to go to the hospital, right? All of these things. And there can be a lot of emotion coming behind it. So it's really important to write things down and be able to feel like you're able to ask those questions. Because when you're in it, sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, I had like 15 things to ask. You walk out and you're like, well, I asked none. So that can be really, really important. Another thing that comes with that is, you know, sometimes they'll actually give you tours of the NICU, or they'll tell you, connect you with like the social worker there, or like a staff member there, sometimes like the nurse educator. So asking if there's somebody that you can be connected with beforehand, just so you're familiar with it, especially if, you know, your child's going in for surgery after birth, or, you know, whatever the reasoning is behind the potential NICU stay, feeling like you have a contact there can be really reassuring, and also being familiar with what it looks like, because it often can feel really jarring going into the NICU for the first time. And you may not be able to necessarily like tour it, but even just knowing where it's located in the hospital, where you have to go, all of those things can be really, really important. So another thing that can be helpful too is working with a perinatal therapist before or during that journey, right? Helping you learn coping strategies, or helping you just like process your emotions and experiences as you're going through it, can be really helpful. It can be helpful when you're also in the NICU, but sometimes that capacity to go to therapy when you're in the NICU life is very limited. So sometimes that's kind of a double-edged sword. So for myself, I actually started therapy 2 months into the journey, because I was like, okay, we're going home at some point. I need to feel like I know I'm probably going to get hit with a lot of emotions. So I was, and it was an excuse to like take a break from the hospital. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this for myself. So if you're able to have that as a resource, I think that can be really, really helpful as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Caitlin, did you have anything you wanted to add so far?
No, I guess the biggest thing would be like with your journey, it was so, so unexpected. Mm-hmm. And I guess for people that they, you know what, if you have twins and it's like they have to be born at 34 weeks, I guess would you say that experience would be different? Like if it's expected versus unexpected, do you know what I mean, Chelsea? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely can be. So a lot of parents that I've worked with and talked to, they do feel a little bit more prepared in a sense, right? They feel like, okay, I kind of knew this was a possibility. It didn't feel quite as jarring as in the beginning, but the emotions on the other side of it can still be similar, like just being actually in the environment. But that initial shock is often decreased because you're like, oh, I knew this was a potential. Whereas for me or other parents who go into like a spontaneous preterm birth, or that have a medical condition that they weren't really aware of, often feel like it's really jarring, and like birth experience can feel really traumatic. Not that it can if you don't know, but there's often just that emotional layer of like, oh my gosh, this isn't what I had planned.
And what are the ways that people then could around you could support, like the most effective ways that you found someone could support someone who's spending, you know, significant time, obviously, in the NICU and not home?
Yeah, absolutely. So for people in your life, sometimes people don't know what they need, right? They're like, I don't even know what you could do for me. So one of is offering what you can do, right? Like actually just being like, I can bring you meals, or I can check in on you, or I can like do these things, rather than being like, let me know if you need anything, because often that like follow through is really hard. And again, if you're in that survival mode, in that high stress situation, sometimes that idea to be like, how do I cope with this, is not even on the table at that time. Another thing that we definitely recommend is, you know, don't be afraid to ask, right? If sometimes it can feel uncomfortable, especially if, you know, the baby's feeling ill or not doing well, it can feel really intimidating for other people in that life to be like, how are things going? Or how are you doing? And I think, you know, just like putting that question forward is really important. And if that person is able to and wants to answer, they can, but they don't have to if they don't want to, right? It's more so just like offering that question up. Another big one that we hear a lot from NICU families is that comparison that can kind of come up, kind of what I alluded to before, like my baby was not as sick as another baby, or my baby wasn't in as long as another baby. And then there can be this kind of guilt in what they're experiencing or their emotions that are coming up. So it's really trying to listen without comparison and being like, well, at least it's not like this, or at least it's not as bad as this, or, you know, like those kind of things. It's really just being compassionate and being able to listen, and also celebrating with them, right? It sounds like kind of a funny thing. And we found that a lot of people outside of the community felt scared to like celebrate, right? It's like, but these milestones feel so big for NICU parents often, right? It's like, oh, I never thought we would get here. Or, oh my gosh, it's the due date. That's crazy. Or, you know, those kind of things. So being able to celebrate those milestones can feel really special. And also not forgetting to check in, right? If they are a long haul NICU parent, life goes on outside of that, right? And sometimes it's hard because we all get caught up in our own stuff. But even again, those text messages, those check-ins, they can feel really helpful and help people feel connected to something outside of the NICU life.
I love that. I saw a text once where it was a multiple choice text. I think it was somewhere on social media where it was like, no need to respond, just respond. Like what a friend would text another friend, you know, respond A, B, or C. A, I will go and pick you up your favorite meal. You know, B, I will pick up your toddler and take them to the park. C, right? Like you're just sort of like, these are the things I can do. And I thought that really just tore at my heartstrings because yeah. I think it's so good. This episode of the We Go There podcast is brought to you by The Bell Method, a fitness company that blends Pilates with pelvic health, creating choreography from science. You might feel overwhelmed at all the abs after baby programs promising to make you bounce back after birth. Or maybe you're feeling unsure of how to exercise in pregnancy and prepare your body for delivery. It can be tough to navigate what information is credible and evidence-based. Women deserve better. I created all of our programs with the guidance of pelvic health physiotherapists, and we continue to evolve our programming to stay current with the latest research. At The Bell Method, we ditch guilt and bring balance to our bodies with programs designed to fit your life stage. We'll help you reduce incontinence, diastasis recti, and prolapse so you feel strong, confident, and empowered throughout pregnancy, postpartum, and beyond. I invite you to enjoy 10% off your first class session with the code WEGOTHERE10. Visit www.thebellmethod.com for more. You have a chapter in the book about preparing for subsequent pregnancies after having had a traumatic experience, whether it was birth trauma, whether it was a NICU stay. And this is such a big topic in my world as someone who runs prenatal courses, because I get a large segment of people who do the push prep course after having had a negative first birth experience. And now they're sort of like, I'm going to prepare the crap out of this. I'm going to go do this course. I'm going to do all the things. I want it to be different this time. And they're very motivated to learn and advocate for themselves and all these things. But it is also, it's a tricky thing I find, because there can be some people who, I mean, obviously the decision to have a second child can also be a big one after that original trauma, but there's also this element of self-blame, as you talk about in the book, that can unfortunately happen, or shame about, well, if only I had done X, or if only I had switched providers, or blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So what have been some of the conversations you have had with your patients around this?
Yeah, it's definitely a big one. Birth trauma is definitely impactful, and it can really impact the decision to expand families. I often have people that we both work with that'll be like, I don't know if I could do this again. Like, I don't know if I have the emotional capacity to actually potentially go through the same situation, or go through something different. And what if it's worse, or what, you know, all those what ifs that can kind of come with it. And so often we want to explore, first off, if possible, the experience that they went through, right? We want to know, like, where are you coming from? What do you feel like was, you know, protective factors, as we like to call it? You know, are there shining light moments where you're like, you know what, this was like super special to me, or this felt really positive to me? And, you know, what maybe is still kind of stuck, or what's still not necessarily processed through, that would be a barrier to having more kids if that's something that somebody's wanting to explore. So that's a big one. And then, of course, we also want to talk about, you know, what that could look like in the future, right? Like, we do what's called like preconception planning. So we encourage our clients to, you know, talk to your OBGYN or your birth team and ask what that could look like, right? Get that really practical information to add into your choice. So it doesn't feel like it's this like big unknown that's like hanging over you. So for myself, it was, what is the chance of me having a baby this early again? And are there things I can do to prevent the next baby from coming earlier? And so once I had that information, I felt, okay, I know it's a risk and I know it could happen again. But on the other side, I know that there's a few other things that I haven't tried that I can try in this process. And that felt really reassuring for myself. So preconception planning. The other thing is working through, again, the trauma. So sometimes we'll encourage people to go through what's called EMDR, which is a type of therapy to help process trauma. We're both trained in it. We work with it a lot. And it can be really helpful in helping somebody process the trauma that they went through, as well as being able to prepare for future experiences and future situations that might feel triggering for them. We also suggest things like, you know, joining online support groups. Again, double-edged sword there. Sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they're not. But, you know, really connecting with families that maybe have had subsequent pregnancies and have gone through that process. So you can ask questions or feel like, you know, maybe you're not so alone in the experience that you're going through.
When's the ideal, I mean, ideal is probably not the best word for it, but time to get to do those types of things around trauma work? Like, is there a moment where you're more open to do the work on it? Is it earlier is better because it's more recent? Like, what do you, have you found anything around that?
With that, I think it really depends on the individual person. Also, we see lots of moms that come to us after, you know what, their traumatic birth experiences, and maybe it's a month, maybe it's a couple months. One thing that we really kind of emphasize, it's like, are you, you know what, are you able to take care of some of your basic needs? Are you able to get a break? Are you able to, you know what, get some sleep? Because all of those components are really important when processing trauma, because you do, you bring it up and you kind of experience that within a safe place. And sometimes that level of distress can feel big, but then it always comes down, and it can be a lot of work. It can be very mentally draining at times to do some of that birth trauma EMDR, but it can be incredibly beneficial if we find that mom is experiencing intrusive thoughts, flashbacks, like on a regular basis. Then we would say, yeah, kind of the sooner the better, but then also like access that support system so you can get like a big chunk of sleep, right? So you can really help kind of establish some of those healthier habits that will be beneficial in processing some of that trauma.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I reflect back, because I had a traumatic experience with the birth of the twins. And now when I think back to it, I realize like how bad it was, more so than when I was in it, because mm-hmm. I was so wanting to push past it that I didn't allow myself probably to, like, the most therapeutic thing I did was my interview with Nikki on this podcast, like, for sure. And I realized like how, cause I couldn't, and that night I couldn't, before it went out, I couldn't even sleep. Cause I was like, it had just released so much through me. But yeah. I just think that, I think we, as moms, that fog that we all refer to, oh, I was in the fog, right? I think that sometimes gets downplayed a lot, because now I look back and I don't even have as many pictures of the twins when they were so little as I probably would have. Like, there's just things that I didn't do as much with the twins as I did with my other two, because I wasn't in the state that I was in, which was clearly a really rough mental state. So yeah, I was just wondering if Nikki had reached out and offered me someone to talk to early on, and I pushed it off and off and off and off. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, what if those types of questions go through my mind? So I was wondering if there's anything that you'd found around that.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's even finding like a caring and safe person to express those experiences with. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a therapist, if you don't have like somebody, if you don't have the capacity to do EMDR, whatever it is, just having somebody that truly can show up and hear you and see you and empathize with you and just say, even if they don't know what to say, just like, that sounds hard, right?
Yeah.
So tough. Just having the space to share your experience can be incredibly therapeutic as well.
Mm-hmm. So I had to.
as long as it's a safe person who's not gonna be like, well, at least you have a healthy baby. Well,
that's what I knew. That's why I'm so grateful, because I knew Nikki would respond in the best way, right? And be like, yes, feel it all. But yeah, exactly. Well, but you had twins. You should be so grateful.
Lexi. Oh God. Anyways, no, we're not gonna get into that. It was a really good episode. It was a powerful one. And so thank you again, Lex, for sharing. It was very raw because it was all very, very fresh for you. And that comes across. I'm gonna pick on you a little bit, Lexi, though, from a place of love, because we've talked about this before. You have said that you are a bit of a people pleaser in nature, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, like, yeah. I don't know if you'd call yourself a recovering people pleaser.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right. You have a chapter in your book, ladies, and you talk about the mother wound and people pleasing. And I feel like I want to connect this to this conversation around trauma and the way we process trauma, the way we compare and often sort of suppress our own experience. And Lexi, you were 1000% doing this because you were like doing it yourself. Well, I should be grateful. I have 4 healthy kids and I should be grateful because of all of the help that I have. And I have a nanny and I have this team of people, and at least I didn't. And you were kind of talking to yourself about, like, kind of like a pep talk. I know you were probably trying to do it to yourself. Like, I should snap out of this. Like, I should, you know, not be so ungrateful or whatever. I don't know.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
All accurate. All the things.
So we've never talked about this concept of the mother wound before. So I feel like this is a good opportunity to do that, and how that plays into the way that we either do or don't process our trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you think as females growing up, what were we taught to do? Right? Be good, listen, don't make a lot of noise, just like make any trouble, don't stir the pot, anything like that. And what did that behavior do? Well, it got rewarded, right? Oh, she's such a pleasure to have in class, right? She's such a good girl. She listens all the time, right? All those narratives that were like, oh yes, I am a good girl. Yes, that's me, right? And it feels good, right? You get that feedback and it feels good. So you continue to do it, right? You continue to do it more and more, right? And then you get to be a teenager and it's like, okay, you push back, but then that pushback isn't tolerated. So you're put in your place more and you learn to kind of like suppress some of those wants and needs and emotions. And that leads to a whole generation of female people pleasers that are just really concerned with, number one, being liked, number two, being perceived as a good person, and putting their wants and their needs and their desires at the bottom of the barrel. Right. And kind of the mother wound is going back and looking at, okay, our mothers, and often when people have strained relationships with their mothers, it's the concept that their mothers really were suppressed and their needs were at the bottom of the barrel. So sometimes that frustration can go towards the daughters, right? And the anger that they feel can be projected onto their daughter, and then so on and so forth as it goes through the generations. And I see lots of women in my practice that have very, well, non-existent or dysfunctional relationships with their own mothers. And they're like, holy shit. I like identify with this concept so, so much as the way that my mother treated me, right? Knowing that my mom didn't have a good upbringing, knowing that she struggled a lot with her own mother, and seeing how it just gets passed down the generations. Of course, is this with everybody? No, like my own grandmother and my own mother were like the most loving and wonderful people. And I didn't experience that. But with so many other women that I've worked with, they're like, oh my gosh, I got that frustration. I got that anger. I got those expectations from my mom. And I want to break that cycle because I don't want to put that on to my daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like that. I don't want to cause a scene. I see this also in birth play out, like this fear to self-advocate, this fear to be a bad patient, to say, no, I'm not pushing my back, fuck you. Like, And I'm like, girls, ladies, whoever, listen, this is a Tuesday for them. This is your birth. You do you, you know, but like, yeah. And this is like my pep talk, but it's like, you know what I mean? There's that, oh, but I'm afraid I'm going to be a bitch. I don't want them to dislike me, even though they're never going to see these people again. There's this fear of that. So there's that piece. And then it also, as you mentioned, it plays into postpartum because we so desperately have been conditioned to want everybody to like us. You know, and it's like, well, I don't want people to think I'm a bad mom and ungrateful for my child it focused so much about my negative birth experience. So I guess I'll just sort of bury these emotions and pretend everything's okay. But meanwhile, I'm a disaster inside.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I did it throughout. Like I would message Nikki after going into my OB appointments, to like get the, and again, we've talked about this before, but it's so bizarre that I have this issue with like having to advocate in front of a OB versus like in a boardroom. I like no problem. Like I'll do it all day. Like it's not an issue for me, but when I'm in front of an OB, I'm like, yes, yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Like whatever. Sure. We'll do that. No problem. Yeah. And funny enough is because of the twins, highly, highly, and gratefully it was because of the issues that I had, but recommended that I had an epidural. I didn't have them with my other babies. And so when I got there, I did ask, which my midwife, because I had both an OB and a midwife, had said that this was totally cool to ask about, was if they could give me an epidural like in stages. So lessen it at the beginning so that I could make sure I didn't have any reactions. Like I understood the feeling, all the things. In my birth report, because I got it, especially it was very therapeutic for me to read through everything that happened because I was out of it for a lot of it. And in it stated that I it was like almost combative and
yeah, like refused the epidural. And you're like, no, I didn't.
But when I read that too, I was like, oh, they're saying I'm like a rude patient. But so it is like it's just, yeah. And it's not that my mom wasn't like I have amazing, amazing mom. She's the best. People like hanging out with my mom more than they like hanging out with me. Like, but I was definitely like, you know, she's very proud of her kids. So it was like prim and proper and wanting to make sure we're all done up. I'd sleep with like curling rollers in my hair so that I had like perfect ringlets and pigtails at school and all the things. She knows this. So anyways, it does reflect that. But so what can we do to break out of that, especially linking back to like the fog where like, again, looking back, like you're just, I mean, for me, I was obviously like, pretty much a disaster, but, and also really hard on myself being like, I shouldn't be feeling this way. I should be feeling differently.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And we hear that all the time, right? We hear the shoulds and the, if I did this differently, or if I could do this differently. And it's often tied to this, like, belief that it's like where we get our value, right? It's like, if I should behave like this, I meet all this criteria and that means I'm like a good person. And this is like an unconscious thing. I don't mean this is like something that we consciously do. But that's what we hear a lot, right? Is this like should statement that everyone shares with us.
Lexi here. Okay. So let's shift to another under the radar, not so hot topic for a minute, body hair. Everyone's got it, but a lot of us want to live smoother. Am I right? 10 years ago, I started Wax On Laser and Wax Bar. Wax On isn't just any waxing and laser hair removal bar. We are the industry leader creating a safe space that inspires people to live confidently in their own skin. Over the years, we've developed trust. Trust that you know you're getting the best quality and comfortable experience every single time. Whatever you come to Wax On for, it's going to be awesome. We've created our own exclusive gold wax formula that's like no other. It's as pain-free and long-lasting as it gets, perfect for all your waxing needs. At Wax On, we've invested in top-of-the-line laser technology that's effective on virtually any hair and skin tone for effective results on every body. Seriously. And we carry a carefully curated collection of products. Some we make ourselves, locally, I might add, and some are from brands we've fallen in love with that adhere to our values and standards of clean, good for you, and female founded. If you haven't experienced Wax On, I invite you to enjoy 20% off your first service with code WEGOTHERE. Visit waxon.ca or download the mobile app to book in with code WEGOTHERE, because there is such a thing as a better hair removal experience to help you live smoother.
So is there anything we can be doing in the moment, like, or going into it?
One thing that I absolutely love, because setting back, like, it all goes back to boundaries, right? And just saying what you need rather than, oh, I'm good, I'm fine. It's like, I actually, if you could grab, you know what, some groceries for me, or you know what, we would really like love a gift card. It feels uncomfortable, but you are saying what you need. Or even when I go to the store and they're like, okay, can I have your email address? Because they want to sign you up for all their 80 million things. I'm like, no, thank you. And I would always give my email address before, because it's just like something that you just did. You just like, okay, it's this. And I hated it every time because I would always have to spell my name. But it's like, no, I don't have to. And do they really, really care? They're just like, I had like one cashier that was not happy with me. But it's like, this is a pretty easy boundary to set, and there's not a lot of pushback, right? But it feels uncomfortable. It's like, no, thank you. But as soon as you build that, it's like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And then it just gets easier to do it. And then it's easier to set other boundaries in your life. So we want to start small, right? Going up that ladder. So it's like, no, I don't give out my email address, right? No, thank you. I don't want to like attend your whatever party, Tupperware party. No, thank you. I don't want to get this. And just like going
Slow clapping over here. Slow clap.
Right? But it's starting like slow. We're not saying like, go set those boundaries with your mom that you didn't set for 40 years. It's like, no, that would probably flood you and not go very well. But starting small and working your way up, increasing that tolerance for that uncomfortableness in your body.
Yeah, I love that. Because I'm a recovering people pleaser, coaches with me have said in the past, like, what would you prefer? Like, just starting with, what would you prefer? Like, I'd prefer this, like, in just small things, like menus, like ordering, you know, like asking for whatever. What would you prefer? So, yeah, I love that, bite-sizing it. And then you can get into the big stuff later.
Yeah.
Don't give out your email address to the cashier, ladies.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. That's your one take home.
Say no to the Tupperware party. And say no to the Tupperware party.
Okay. So it really, really bothers me. And I would always do it before. And it like good and bad, right? But they always ask you to donate, right? Would you like to donate a dollar to blah, blah, blah? And before I'd be like, yeah, of course, I'm not a monster. Like, I'm going to donate to the children's hospital. But then it's like, those asshole companies are using it for tax write-offs. And I'm like, no, how about you, Toys R Us? You donate a dollar of your own money. And
you donate to X, Y, and Z on the side.
Yeah.
Anyways,
but
right?
Like, if I'm going to donate to anything, I'm going to do it not through another company. Right. But it's just like another little boundary. And that one just feels a little bit more, because it's like, do they think I'm a monster because I'm not donating to the children's hospital? It's like, well, I can donate, but I will donate my own way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love that. And it's interesting how there's got to be a difference between some of us, like, who have more of a challenge with that than others. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested. I mean, I'm not sure if they've done studies on it, but like how that impacts your ability to process stuff that happened to you or feel guilt around it, or, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know, like, I guess linking that then to, like, I know you get asked a lot about mom guilt. So maybe we chat a bit about that. Does that make sense? Does it go, do these link into it? Do I guess that's a great question, Nikki. Like, do people pleasers feel more mom guilt?
Let's do a little mini research study right here. Like, what do you
mean? I feel constant mom guilt, but I don't know if that's because I'm a people pleaser, just like feeling like I'm way too busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I try and compartmentalize. That's my, like, key. I really try and compartmentalize my life into sections and boundaries. That's the biggest thing for me, is like setting 5 to 7:30 every night is like my kid time, and ask Adam and I like hold each other accountable to that. But it's so hard. I still feel mom guilt all the time. Nikki, do you get really bad mom guilt? I feel like you don't get as bad mom guilt.
I don't get as bad mom
guilt. Oh my God.
But I'm also the person that's like, don't have a problem being like, nah, I already donated. Peace out. So
maybe it's linked.
Yeah. And that's, it's interesting. But again, like, I mean, for sure I've gotten guilt before, but I also, I don't know, I work from home every day. Like, I'm around more. I haven't had guilt.
Why?
Yeah. But this is a whole other conversation. We should do another separate episode on this, but I do believe that, you know, it'd be interesting to find out if like in the impact of this mother wound and this people pleasing and potentially anxiety and guilt and around wanting to be all things to all people all the time, where you end up being the person that comes last. And that's got to be bad for your mental health, right?
Absolutely. When you don't take any time for yourself, or there's like half an hour at the end of the day where you're like in a coma, just lying there, right? And it's like, oh, okay, I guess I got to do this all again tomorrow. But it's like, what are the things that you look forward to, right? What are those little like mini rewards? It's like, okay, maybe Wednesday's going to be a really long day, but Thursday I'm leaving work early, and then we're going to go and we're going to do this. And then I have massage Friday. So it's giving those little, you know what, those mini breaks. And for a lot of people, it's like, okay, it's not realistic to go on a like 3-day weekend holiday. So it's like, what are some small little things that you can build in throughout your week, kind of in the nooks and crannies of your life that feel good to you, that aren't another load or aren't another thing that, you know what, you have to do, but something that you get to do, something that you enjoy doing.
Yeah. I like that. Even like letting the laundry sit longer so you can do like a quick whatever it is during nap time that you'd prefer to do, right? Like maybe little things like that even could make differences.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For some people, it's like getting their nails done. For some people, it's getting outside, going for a walk, listening to a podcast. For me, it's watching like 48 hours or Dateline. Like, it's different for everybody, right? But it's like, what is something small that's like, oh, that was what I needed. So it's not all like grinding all the time.
Oh, yeah. A good episode of Real Housewives is killing.
You and your Pirate's booty and your Real Housewives. It's hilarious.
In a bath all together at the same time.
Oh my God. It's so true though. And I think I will always say one thing, because I hear this a lot where it's like, I don't have time. I bought your program. I want to exercise. I don't have time. I feel guilty leaving the kids or ignoring the laundry or not meal prepping or putting the kids in front of the TV so I can get a half hour or something like that. Right. There's always this, I should be this perfect, should be in quotes, you know, but then when you finish, you realize how much better you feel. And again, I'm speaking from an exercise perspective, but anything, a walk, you know, something, and you're just like, God, I feel so much better. And then you have more energy to bring to, and more compassion. I'm less yelly, you know?
Totally. Totally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I started working out in the morning last week, and it was hard. Like, it was really hard that first week. It was like, oh my God. But now it's like easier and something that I actually look forward to. Mm-hmm. Really, really weird. But I'm like, oh, I'm not like getting out of the house in like a rush or a frenzy. Like, I just feel more regulated.
Totally. It makes such a difference. You've got to, like, however, to squeeze it in.
Ditch the guilt.
I do not feel guilty about that. Like, I prioritize me time for sure every day, and I try and squeeze it in any single way I can, even if it's 15 minutes, 10 minutes, like some sort of movement. Otherwise I won't be a good mom. I won't be as good of a mom, I should say. So yeah, prioritize it. Prioritizing you. That's great advice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And normalizing that it's not easy, and it takes practice, and it's like a muscle. Like, not giving your email address to the cashier. It's a muscle. You can practice small.
Yes.
Oh, this is so good, my friends. Well, I would love your book, and I think everybody should read it. Again, it's called Not Your Mother's Postpartum Book, and it clearly isn't, because there was no manual like for this for our moms. And tell us a little bit more about, I mean, a lot of people who are listening to this probably already follow you at Mama Psychologists on Instagram. Tell us a little bit more about where they can get the book and where they can find you online.
Yeah, so we are on Instagram at Mama Psychologist. We're also on TikTok now and Pinterest. And the book can be found online at Amazon. Book Depository has free worldwide shipping, or Chapters has it online as well. Chapters Indigo and Barnes & Noble in the States.
Amazing. Amazing. Thanks so much for coming on. And yeah, have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode. And in the meantime, follow us on Instagram at WeGoThere Podcast and check out WeGoThere Podcast.com for more info.